Season 6, Episode 10, Moo! It's a stampede. And a warning, a fatality is discussed in this episode. Listener discretion is advised. As always, country boy Alan shares a story about a cow that was spooked during the transit from a vehicle to a pen, resulting in the death of one farm worker and a serious injury of another. This case prompts Trage to recall one of his prosecutions. These cows get spooked at night. At night. He remarks, well, wasn't that a bucking excellent story? Much to Sarah's laughter. Alan remains on point. Thank you, Alan. With stories of tragic circumstances in the case of a fall from heights and the teen debates the merits of fall protection, protection generally, and arrest in work design. This is a great episode. Hello, and welcome to the Why Work podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work.
Welcome to the system.
Yeah. One, two, get the speed off with D. And we're gonna bust it up like this. I'm crushing empty bourbon cans with my dirty hands, poisoned by devil's weed, dreaming off foreign lands. Ever since my very spark of life, I've been caught in this astrological plight.
G'day, Trage. How are you going on this beautiful day? Brisbane at its best. Sarah, you?
I'm awesome. I was listening to our episode, Oh, Stay Louder, The Bull in the China Shop. It's really good.
What was that about?
You don't remember?
No.
The Bull in the China Shop, the electric vehicle.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's a cracker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, stay louder.
Oh, stay louder. Yeah. Your makeup will melt once you listen to this one.
Well, Sarah, this time I want to talk not about a bull, but a cow.
Okay, tell me about a cow. Tell me about a cow.
All right, I want to take you to Wales. This case was only just published a month ago. And we have a cow being delivered in Wales to be dropped off in a pen. And the cow got loose, was distressed, aggressive. It charged down a 75-year-old man who subsequently died from the injuries he sustained.
Slow down. A cow? I've just got to get the journey map here. I've got to understand this. So a cow is being loaded into some...
Offloaded into a pen.
Yeah, so he's driven. He's in a, driving down today, I saw three bull, you know, in a little carriage in a trolley.
Yes.
So you've got this cow driving to a pen.
Mm-hmm.
Farmer Allen.
Yeah.
So a cow is being driven to a pen. They open the gate, the tailgate, and the cow, instead of going straight into the pen in a secure way, it gets out. Is that what happens?
Correct.
And hunts down a 75-year-old man?
75-year-old man. He had nothing to do with the delivery. He just happened to be in that area. And he suffered multiple injuries and subsequently died some days later.
Alan, are you saying that the cow gets out from the tailgate, the little ramp, to get out of its carriage into the pen, it escapes and it hunts down a 75-year-old man?
Well, let me come back to that.
Okay.
Let me just give you the full story. So this cow gets loose, causes multiple injuries to the 75-year-old man, and then another man who tries to assist capturing it gets charged and injured as well, but not fatally injured.
I've just got this image of everybody, Farmer Joe running around the pens, and like old MacDonald, right? Chickens flying and a cow bucking.
Yes, very much like that. And the cow, sadly, was put down by police.
Aww.
So we've had a sad case in that we've had a 75-year-old man die, another man seriously injured, and the cow itself was put down. The court ended up fining the company that was delivering the cow £75,000. And I worked it out today. That's about $145,000 and had to pay just over £5,000 in legal costs, which is about $10,000. Now, the court made the decision, and this is the interesting part, is that they could have easily designed the work so that when the cow came off the trailer, it had nowhere to go. It was fully fenced in.
Yeah, you would think of an enclosure, right? You think of a barrier on either side where they just walk forward and go straight into the pen.
Yeah.
So they were. It was loose. There was no protective barrier.
No, nothing to restrain it once it got loose. And you can even have a bigger barrier around so that even if the cattle break free of the immediate barrier, they're going to be enclosed in a larger barrier. And this is a big issue for people in the cattle industry in designing places where you load cattle and unload cattle, and at abattoirs too, to make sure that cattle can't get loose and hurt people, and also so people can interact with the cattle in a safe way. Didn't happen in this case. Classic case of needing to properly design the work.
Well, that's interesting because as I was thinking about that cow, I was thinking about a cattle case that I did some time ago in Longreach involving precisely that, the transportation of large amounts of cattle to the cattle yard for cattle sales. So you would think, of course, that system of work would be reasonably well designed, barriers, rails. So there, unlike your cow story, on this particular occasion, the cattle truck pulled up and the cattle would just go in an orderly line.
Yeah.
As they do. They're pretty docile beasts, for those of you who know a little bit about cattle.
I do know a bit about cattle, and they can get, it's one of the tricks, you've got to keep the cattle calm.
Keep the cattle calm. So the fellow who was corralling the cattle was keeping all the cattle calm. Now, the environmental conditions were this. It was at night, so they were using floodlights.
Mm.
That sounded like an episode out of SpongeBob at night. SpongeBob would hate to go outside at night when he tucked the rubbish out. But anyway, that's a separate story. For those who love SpongeBob like I do, it's a great, great cartoon. But anyway, they were working at night. Fine. However, the floodlights, of course, cause shadows. And one of the
spooked the cattle.
The word that I used in my report was spooked. The bull became spooked and it started charging the fellow, the worker. And he saw it, country lad, and he ran. And he ran as fast as his little legs could take him, jumps the fence. But unfortunately, one of his legs, I think his right leg, didn't make it over and the cow's head rammed his leg. It was an amputation injury.
Oh, ouch. How terrible.
This is like the cow jumped over the moon. And, you know, how you talked about docile animals. I think that is the barrier. Is think about all the cartoons and the storybooks we have. The cow has big, large eyes with curly eyelashes, and they're considered always to be calm and docile. But you've just mentioned, hang on, we're talking about a live beast, an animal that weighs
heavy.
A heck of a lot.
Very heavy.
That's right.
And this is really interesting because so whilst all the best design systems and all the best modern plans, I was quite intrigued by the facts, as I always am. I like to descend into the detail because that's where the devil is. And there is an old, I know I've talked about the frolic doctrine before, or things be res ipsa locator, things speak for themselves, or force majeure, an act of God, etc. Now, it escapes me now, and I've tried to look for the term, but I actually found a very old ye olde England, a very old medieval term for when beasts or wild stock get spooked. And it's a Latin term, and I found it. And I put that in there in case anybody wanted to.
Can you remember it now?
What is it?
I can't.
Oh.
It was so out there. Of course, my former boss, Peter Matthews, as you know, greatly appreciate it because he's one of the best historians in the business. But I looked for this term and I found it. See, that's the benefits of doing a Bachelor of Arts degree. I found it and I just thought this is going in because there was no feasible explanation other than, Alan, as you rightly said, this cow got spooked. And it ended in a grievous bodily harm injury. So I guess my point to this is, Work eight, it's pervasive, it's everywhere. Some of the unknowns, despite all the best plans, having the best railings, they're even, in fact, if anything, from memory, these barriers were quite high, which would it was harder for the fellow to jump. But because there was such a random event. But what was interesting was it was done at night, and from memory, a lot of the work for this particular workplace was being done during the day. So I wonder if systems of work had changed as a result of it. But anyway, there was no further action as a result of it. It was just too out there.
Yeah, I have
but it happened. So that's a great story that you mentioned.
I have a friend that lives on a farm, and she walks around her garden, Karen, and her cow follows her like a pet dog or cat and is an ankle biter. You know, walks around, wants to be around her everywhere she goes. And you think that, you know, nice, docile, aw, cute little cow.
Well, they follow. Did you know, though, just as an aside, the name Karen has dropped in popularity.
Terminology of don't be such a Karen, mate.
It's just dropped. I read that in an article. I just thought you just...
Well, it's been used in pop culture, right? Don't be such a Karen, a complainer, someone who causes problems. But this Karen is a problem solver, right? She's awesome. So you've met her, Karen, from Real Serious Games, okay?
All the Karens out there, we support you.
So
my sister's a Karen.
Love
her.
So
go
one
Karen.
For my sister.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I was once driving near Cambria, which is in San Luis Obispo County in California, central coast of California. And I'm just pulling off the side of the road, and there's this really artistic community, lots of art and glass, hand-blown glass, that kind of thing. And something caught my eye, and I looked into the field, and what do you know? In that moment, that second of time, I saw a cow bucking, and I thought, I've never seen a cow go so wild and hind legs up in the air. It gave birth. I saw it give birth live to a little calf. I was like, what?
That's wonderful. Wonderful experience.
But then to realize how strong they are and how much they can buck and use those hind hooves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be, I've had cattle as pets, and they can be beautiful and very placid animals, but they're big, heavy animals.
Yep.
And if they're frightened, they can be dangerous.
Well, let's just
stampede.
Let's call what it is, a moving item of plant.
Live
except
animals.
It's not a plant.
They're not plant.
Yeah, no. Live
animals. Except animal. They do eat plants.
And you always must be more careful with live animals. They're unpredictable.
You know what have we said on the show before? Never work with animals. Children, but some people have to work with animals and some people have to work with children.
It's a day in the life and their job.
That was a bucking excellent story.
Did you just say that? But so, the bottom line here, like you said, Alan, is all of that preparation of what are the consequences, what are the consequences? Do the scenario-based analysis on this, right?
And what would, so in your case, putting on your design hat, what is the likelihood of
I don't even care about likelihood. I just think it could kill someone, so I go consequence on this type of issue, right? And it is a feasible reality. So it's more about, is it feasible? Could it actually happen?
You say feasible, someone says likelihood, you say tomato, we say tomato.
Oh, no, likelihood implies probabilistic assessment. So
I think it was very foreseeable and that...
foreseeable, there you go.
There we go.
Use your legal language.
And it's simply a case of taking the time to stop and think about
how
the workplace should be designed.
And acknowledge that this is a workplace, that is a work action, and we're dealing with unpredictable live animals no matter what.
And just as an aside, that's right, Welsh cows are just as volatile as Australian cows.
I don't know if that's true. Have you got any evidence of that?
You know, or don't aggravate a Welsh cow either. Just don't aggravate an Australian. Well, we know what can happen when you aggravate an Australian cow. It gets spooked. It's like a random animal.
There's so many... cow phrases we could use, like holy cow, right? You know, wow. Yeah. Or cow phrases, the cow jumped over the moon.
Don't know. But anyway, I don't know. All right, Alan, what else you got?
All right. Well, I've got another one that might interest you about an entertainment company.
Welcome to the system.
Now, this is another UK decision, and there's limited information that's available. So I'll just tell you the information that I do have. So there's an entertainment company that hired out these big warehouses. They were like hangars for large aeroplanes. They were huge, these hangars, used for filming of movies like Harry Potter and Star Wars. And what had happened on this particular case is that an individual, a 52-year-old man, had been employed as a rigger. Now, very interestingly, he was also employed as a contractor. So he wasn't an employee.
Mm-hmm.
He was a contractor. And there's lots and lots of people out there that are particularly interested in principal contractors managing contractors. And in this particular case, the rigger had climbed up onto the roof of this enormous hangars, and he was working on the roof and fell through. Now, they said that he was, and this is where the facts are a bit difficult to grapple with, he said he was somehow working in relation to a cube that was being used for entertainment. It was a sound, was a windproof and waterproof cube. So I'm not sure exactly what was the deal with the cube, but he fell 10 metres and suffered fatal injuries as a result of that fall. Now, as a result of that case, the company got fined £16,000, which, checking on the exchange rate today, is worth about $31,000 Australian dollars. What was even more interesting is the rigger who died, he had a harness on, but he hadn't clipped his harness to a lanyard. And I'm not sure for our listeners overseas, but you see that quite often in Australia. You can be driving around, you see someone on the roof, they've got the harness on, but they haven't clipped to any lanyard. So, of course, it's useless. It's not going to do anything unless it's clipped to the lanyard. Also very interesting, because if you think of it, movie production company has engaged a specialist contractor to climb up on the roof, and he doesn't do what is his normal day-to-day work, which is clipping the lanyard to his harness, and he falls through the roof. It's always hard with these cases. You know, you wonder whether if they'd contested that charge, how they would have gone.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. If, let's say, I mean, not everyone is going to work on a movie set all the time. The first thing that comes to my mind when you tell me that case is when you're clipping in lanyards, first thing that I think about are anchor points. It sounds to me, because this isn't a traditional construction site, drilling down into what is required, say, in the other world, in the tangible world, and in the Hollywood world, and often little things like that might be missed. And if this fellow's on the roof, these things are prescribed. They're in the regulation. They're in the standards. Mm. They drill down into the codes. And then you've got to work, you've got to make do with what you've got. So, yeah, I think the entertainment industry's got a long way to go. It's got to mature.
Yeah, you scrape back the surface, and there's not a lot of difference once you scrape all that colour and flair away.
Well, remember I said in the rides that you've got, when you see a beautiful, like the cha-cha-cha or the sizzler, the smiley face, but behind that, even the clowns, behind that are moving items of plant, cogs and wheels and pistons.
Big machinery. So I was out years ago with some road construction guys, and I was just having a look at some of their work, and then we were back at their workshop, and the road construction team spoke to me about some of the, you know, regional advisors that walk on through work health safety or otherwise to critique their work, to evaluate it, to audit it, and, you know, that whole ivory tower doesn't really understand kind of phenomenon. So they were describing the issue of wearing this fall protection and fall prevention kind of aspects of any harnesses, anchoring points when they're on large machinery, right? So let's just recap. You've got fall prevention and fall protection, right?
And you also have systems where if a person falls, they won't hurt themselves as a result
arrest.
Of the fall.
Fall arrest measures as well. Mm. So
yeah.
Terms used.
That's right. So one would be things like the scaffolding, the protections to work on tall equipment.
Yep.
And then you've got the fall prevention, and the fall protection would be more the harness. Right? So you're talking about that second level tier, which includes some of the fall arrests. And so in this case, they were describing when they're up on the top of a large profiler, you know, that big machinery that churns up road bitumen and spits it out to chop it up to be able to tear apart road and then replace it with new bitumen. So when they're up in this big, tall equipment and they have to work and they've got a spanner in their hand or they're doing something, they hooked me up, harness, lanyard, and they said, let's just mock it. I was on the ground, right? But let's just simulate. Pretend you're working and you've got your span in your hand and you drop that spanner. And I did it and it was a bit of a smooth fall. They're like, no, you're really working. You actually drop it. So I dropped it suddenly and went to instinctively go grab it as you might, right? Nope. And the whole harness just jolts you. So in your groin where the straps are, your chest is like, doh! And they went, yep, that's it. That's it. Now that is why this is really difficult to use in reality. Yeah. And so many of those tests simply aren't done to understand the reticence of workers to comply with what's written on paper instructions, right? There's not a lot of that analysis to understand the realities of the work and to see if better design strategies can be developed. And that's just part of introducing any new technologies into a business is do your focus group trials and consult with people. And I say more than we already talked that consulting's not enough. It's really participatory, you know, discussions and trials together in a design framework. Yeah. Just ticking the box and saying you must wear harness. Well, what's the realities? They've got to juggle all of this tools and equipment and supplies in their hands, and they do. They easily drop it and they get knackered.
Interesting choice of words. But yes, you're quite right in that workers are reluctant to use different types of protection from injuries from falls. But injuries from falls are life-changing. Yeah. You know, you absolutely have to protect against
that. I'm not suggesting that you don't wear the equipment. I'm suggesting that the information needs to go back to the designers of the equipment and the designers of the system to explain what the realities are to see if there can be some ongoing improvements or better strategies.
Now you won't often hear me singing the praises of the government, but the codes of practice for falls are very good, very thought-provoking, and you might not read it in terms of the detail for compliance, rather read it for stimulating ideas about how you can tackle the issue.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, and I've had many discussions and over many times with the prosecution, and often defence seem to think, oh, well, we had a harness, you know, strapped to a lanyard. That's a pretty cost-effective measure. In some circumstances, it's just not enough to have some type of a fall arrest mechanism, a quality barrier by way of edge protection, which is not cheap, would have been the only way to have prevented it. Because sometimes people are looking for corners to cut and they'll say, you know what, they've got a harness, they can use it. But they might not necessarily be the most effective measure to prevent fall.
Well, that's exactly what happened in this case, movie producers had relied on their expert contractor and trusted in him wearing his lanyard, and he didn't.
And, you know, and getting back to my point, and a lanyard may have worked, but if there is no particular anchor point or if there's no, like, swing, because they do, and I know precisely how harnesses work, given my interest in rock climbing, anchor points, bolts, and so on, there are just some workplaces where if you're working at height, scaffolding or edge protection is really the only way, unless someone loosens the things, but that's beyond all that. But otherwise, some people think, oh, you know what, I'll get my harness, she'll be right, mate, clip it on. Oh, nothing really to clip on, and you have an incident. So, look, as long as people are having this conversation, and getting back to Sarah's point, really taking this whole of systems approach, design this for what it's supposed to be. No more, no less.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.
Welcome to the system.
What you thinking? You jumped up in the system.
Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system.
Yeah.
Welcome to the system.